Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Dante Culpepper Show. We're going to tell you, after all this debate, we're going to settle it. And I'm going to tell you why Dante Culpepper is a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins. And it's fine if you don't like it. I quite frankly don't care. It's about getting the truth and the real information out there. Along with that, we're going to briefly discuss OTAs before we really dive in. We're going to have some fun here tonight. Welcome to the Real Forno
Show. Welcome to the Real Forno Show.
Welcome to the Real Forno Show. Managing editor of the USA Today's Vikings Wire. Betting and college football analysis for the Fantasy Points website. Publisher of Substack Run and Shooter. Host of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungry on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. As well as a founding member of Vikings First and Skull.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, as I have to, like, burp as I go talking. Welcome to the Real Forno Show. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is producer Dave in the top right corner. Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good for this Monday. I'm busy. I do want to thank Justin for being able to hop on yesterday at the last minute and join me. We converted two old bloggers to a Skulling with Friends episode, and it was outstanding.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I see Justin in the chat here today, along with some of our other every weekers. And I want to thank you guys all for joining us here tonight. We're going to have some fun. We're going to briefly talk OTAs quick, because today started phase three. And why is phase three important? It's the first time you actually get to see, like, full live team drills. 7-on-7, 9-on-9, 11-on-11. And that's important because it's going to help continue to install this offense. The nice part about this year compared to last year was more about a full install. This year, they're going to be able to kind of work on what they already have, change some things up, tweak some things, but the verbiage is going to be consistent. It's going to be the same from last year, so they don't have to, like, relearn stuff. And I think that's really important here, Dave. It's about continuity and continuing to do the right things and continuing to help grow and develop this team. And I'm really excited about it. This is a unit that is very, very good. And they got better, in theory, with the addition of Jordan Addison this offseason.
And he's literally on the offensive side of the ball. They've got the biggest advantage because everybody is coming back, with the exception of Jordan Addison. He's the one that's going to have to be tutored. And I'm sure that's going to take place. It's something we hope to see, you know, through film, whatever the Vikings release, and they're to the point where they'll release the highlights every day. When the press gets to go out there tomorrow, hopefully we see that Keenan McCardell is, you know, personally taking him aside, that JJ's taking him aside, even TJ Hawkinson talking to him about, hey, you've got to do this and this to bring him up to speed quick. They've only got to bring up the one guy. So I hope that goes quickly. But it's going to be fun to see him. And that's on the offensive side. On the defensive side, I can't wait to see this go in and start to go the plan, the Flores plan, go into action of guys suddenly moving here and moving there, safeties in the box, guys, you know, all doing all this stuff and learning that defense. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is going to be really fun. I'm really excited to kind of see how everything evolves, because how everything evolves is honestly what's the most important thing. This is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really excited, and you're going to get to see the rookies kind of ball out. I said on Purple Daily on Draft that got released this afternoon that I'm most excited to see Jay Ward, because I want to see how the Vikings use him. they drafted him and they called him a safety, but that's not what he's going to play. He's going to be kind of a jack of all trades guy. How are they going to use him early on? How are they going to kind of showcase him and get him comfortable in the offense? That is going to be an interesting thing to watch because there's a lot of different things that you can kind of pull from it.
Across the whole defensive back group, where corners and safeties, you've got Jay Ward, you've got McKee Blackman, right? How is he going to fit in? He was the one selected, obviously, with Flores's approval. Is he going to beat up Booth or Evans? Are we going to see that? How are Booth and Evans looking? Are they going to be better in their second year? How does the new guy Murphy look and fit into all this? Is he helping everybody? Like he said, he learned from Patrick Peterson. That will be a good thing. How all that comes together, whether Bynum comes up and plays a little nickel or they keep the Murphy in, how are they they're going to mix it up. I heard a stat today, and I think it was from our buddy Phil Mack, that when Flores was coaching Miami, one of the years they had the second most defensive coverage variations in the entire league. It was hard to figure out what sort of coverage they were in because they were changing it all the time. How they'd set it up, it was a chess piece. And we all know Flores loves to match up some guy's strength against the opposing offensive guy's weakness or strength to try to build, to get the most out of it. So it's going to be fun. Fun.
Big time fun, Dave. That's really the only way you can put it. But it's the off season. There's not a lot to talk about. I will say this. The NFL did pass two bylaws today. Or sorry, passed one, and they're going to talk about another. As you can hear Odie in the background chewing on a bottle.
One I like. The other one I do not like and hope gets chicken. Brian Porch is calling for 13 wins this year due to that offense. I agree with you, Brian.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That's a little ambitious considering the schedule, but it's the NFL. They got to play the games. You never know. The NFL is talking about instituting the college football rule for kickoffs, Dave. And what that is, is if the ball clears the 25-yard line and you flash a fair catch, it counts as a touchback and it shoots it to the 25. Reason being, they want to cut down on concussions. Concussions are still high in terms of kickoff returns, and they want to utilize that. If that passes, Kenny Wongwu's value goes significantly down because there's just going to be a lot less kickoffs. People are just going to be like, yeah, we'll just take the touchback. It's fine. And
yeah, it's the same as the touchback, right? If kicker kicks it through the end zone and versus somebody kicking it short and going, you're getting at the same spot.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, his lack of value on offense as of right now is deeply concerning. And when you kind of piece all those things together, it could spell the end of his tenure in Minnesota if that ends up passing. It also could mean nothing. We really don't know, but it's something that you are going to want to keep an eye on because he is not exactly what you would call a dynamite player outside of, hey, I'm a great returner. He's not shown any aptitude to play offense. That's a big deal, especially with this team is consistently preaching versatility. Odie.
Yeah, Odie's being loud. That's okay.
He's a good boy, but he's, the wife was supposed to get home right about now, but she is off looking at flowers instead. I don't know
happy
why
wife, we need
flowers,
but happy life. Whatever. Trust me, that works.
Anyways, the second one, you'll probably remember hearing it known as the emergency QB rule. It was implemented until 2011, when they ratified the new CBA, they got rid of it. Emergency QB rule, you get to dress a third quarterback, and they can really only play if the first two guys get hurt. If they play before the fourth quarter, the other two quarterbacks do not get to come back into the game. That's back, but it's not going to take up one of the 46 active roster spots. That's huge. It brings more value for you to have a third quarterback on your normal 53. And you don't lose a game day roster spot to have him dressed. It's kind of like the emergency goalie situation in the NHL. If you don't know that, they actually have a guy with the team that's played goalie in his past, like at a high school or college level. And he's just kind of like a member of the front office, and he'll end up playing on an emergency situation. And sometimes those guys end up playing pretty well, and it's a really cool story. But goalie is just such a weird position that they actually are allowed to have an emergency. And after the disaster with San Francisco in the NFC Championship game, nobody wants that to be them. So it's back. And this is good for the Vikings, because if that happens to them, God forbid, they've been really lucky with quarterback injuries, but luck always runs out. It's going to run out eventually. And if that happens to them, they'll be able to play either Jaren Hall or Nick Mullins when that time comes, which is objectively a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. What I like about it is that there's no pressure to not have three quarterbacks on the roster now, and they could use that as training. So hopefully we have better quality quarterbacks in the developmental pipeline with that third guy being there and it not costing a roster spot. Justin, I have not heard from Darren today. I assume he's been busy. I've sent him a couple of messages on Facebook. Have not heard replies. I have heard from Mary. Mary's doing good. So things are getting better on that front. Those are the two rule changes that have popped up today. The other thing that was announced today, which I'll probably talk about when I record the Vikings Daily Opener, is that Green Bay has been selected for the 2025 draft party.
What a disaster. Like, and this isn't a shot at the Green Bay Packers organization or the facility. So if you've never been to Lambeau Field, I highly recommend it. It is a place of history. It is a really cool atmosphere. I was at the tie in 2018, and it was awesome. But I'll say this. If you go for the draft to Lambeau Field, it's going to be an utter disaster. Lodging is scarce. So Lambeau Field is literally in a neighborhood. Like, you park, like, people with houses by Lambeau Field rent out their driveway for parking. And, like, if you live, like, if you have season tickets and live on that street right by Lambeau, you can just walk to the games. It's great. But here's the thing. How are you going to get all these team representatives? How are you going to get all these players, their families? How are they going to have lodging? Like, are they going to stay in Milwaukee a couple hours away? Are they going to stay in Madison a couple hours away? Appleton is a half hour away, and they barely have any lodging. Like, logistically, this is set up to be a mitigated disaster. And it's not fair to these players. It's not fair to the organizations that have to go there. And it's not a shot at Green Bay. They don't have the infrastructure or space that you need for something like this. It is a 100,000-person town without any, like, really suburbs from anywhere. Like, it's just a weird idea. Now, I will say, being drafted in, like, one of the birthplaces of the NFL, Green Bay, Wisconsin, that's kind of got a cool cachet to it. I get that. Logistically, it's looking like it's going to be a nightmare, and I don't understand why they're going to do that.
It's going to be interesting. I'll give it that. And the beer sponsor could have been better. There are some good beers actually brewed in Wisconsin. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. they did not choose one. So you can look up who their beer sponsor is.
Yeah. Beer sponsor, bad beer. Okay. Just give me a Busch Light and I'm happy. And that's just domestic beer. I've been on a Corona kick lately, though. There's something about just putting a lime in the long neck and then sipping it outside. I just dig it. Let's get to the topic at hand, Dave.
The topic, the one that we hyped, the one that's blowing up Twitter, the one that has split fans left to right, top to bottom. It is the blockbuster of all blockbusters. We all know the greatest quarterback that ever played on Minnesota is Fran Tarkenton. Well, what happened this weekend? PFF includes another quarterback, and it started the debate. They included Dante Culpepper.
Well, let's contextualize this a little bit. So what the PFF NFL podcast is doing is they're taking a player from the team's past in their prime and putting it on the current roster to make the team better. They picked Culpepper. Now, is he going to be that much bigger of an impact as like a Kevin Williams or John Randall would be, considering what the defensive line situation is? You can have that argument, absolutely. But make no mistake about it. Dante Culpepper in this era, in this offense, you'd have a bigger, faster, more accurate Josh Allen on your hands. Well, like Dante Culpepper was on his way.
Dante Culpepper was Josh Allen before Josh Allen was Josh Allen.
He was Josh Allen with Drew Brees and Cam Newton all mixed into one. Like, he was super accurate coming out of college. He set the NCAA record for career completion percentage at Central Florida. He threw for a lot of yards. He has a cannon, and he could run he's built like a linebacker or an edge rusher. Like, Culpepper was just a different breed. And I want to say this before we get started, and then we're going to bring up a lot of different points. Culpepper's better than Kirk Cousins. I'm going to be honest, I don't think it's arguable. And I'm going to explain over the course of the next however long this show ends up going, probably another 30, 40 minutes. Everybody who says Cousins is better looks at raw counting stats. Luke Inman from Locked On ended up posting this a couple months ago. And you have the graphic ready. These are called counting stats. Your basic ones, the ones that everybody knows. Passing yards, passing touchdowns. Like, look at that. Yeah, Cousins was better. But this is also incredibly disingenuous. You know why it's disingenuous? Doesn't account for errors. Not at all. Why is accounting for errors so important? Because you want to try and understand the conditions that they had to play under. In Dante's era, you could maul wide receivers. You could like spear them across the middle. You could do all those things. In today's day and age, if you lay a pinky on them after 5 yards, it's a flag. Like, it's different.
And in Dante's era, you could abuse quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Defensive linemen love to do it all the time. Now, unless you lay them down and tuck them into bed, it's a roughing the passer call.
Yeah, you take that and you factor in that, like, what Culpepper had to deal with. I'm kind of blanking what we talked about on defense. And when you compare stats across eras, compare the stats to the players that they played against. And that is going to tell you the story. And we'll get deeper into that. If you just want to compare the top quarterbacks of 2004 to the top quarterbacks of now, almost every quarterback threw more than 10 interceptions a season. Almost every quarterback fumbled 10 to 15 times a year. Like, Culpepper had a fumbling issue. He had one even compared to his era, but it wasn't such a dire situation that he was that much worse than his era. He was bad. But things have changed so much for how quarterbacks can even get hit that makes a difference in fumbles, makes a difference in interceptions. And you have to contextualize what they're playing against. And quite frankly, Culpepper had to play against harder competition in that sense than now. So let's talk about that.
Talked about Dante had small hands.
So Dante didn't have that small of hands. Like, now the threshold's 9 inches. Back then it was 10. Dante's were 9.5.
And like, they're bigger than the first round.
His hands are a full inch bigger than Kenny Pickett's.
Like, or the first round draft choice of this year.
Yep. So, like, anybody who just tries to tell you counting stats, just straight counting stats. Oh, Cap, I highly recommend, I don't know enough about Joe Cap. Talk to Dave or talk to Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings.
Luke would have more. Cap was around on my first game that I saw. He was a quarterback. But he was one mean SOB. And you want to talk about tough? Ooh. Mm-mm-mm. And you want to talk about a brand of football back then where anything went? That was the 70s. That's before Dante.
Let's kind of take a look at some stats.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Dante Culpepper's like EPA per play in his like at the end towards the end of his career, 0.213. I don't think Kirk Cousins has ever had an EPA per play above 2 in his entire career. Culpepper averaged that over 2 seasons. You look at his EPA CPOE composite, 0.132. Considering the era he played in, that was phenomenal. Peyton Manning, who's considered one of the top quarterbacks of all time, had a 0.168. And you got to remember, in 2004, he threw 49 touchdown passes. You have to compare it to the era that they're in and then understand that. This was great for his era. Dante Culpepper was arguably a top 5 player in fantasy football, and quarterbacks weren't even valued. He was going top 5 overall. Fantasy football doesn't necessarily mean a lot, but it kind of tells you how valued this guy was by the general population. And you know what all we did? Whine and whine and whine when we should have been whining about how the Vikings treated these football teams, not giving them enough resources. The defenses, Dave, the defenses were absolutely atrocious. Here's a stat from Eric Eager of PFF, formerly of PFF and now of Sumer Sports. 2000 to 2005, the Dante Culpepper tenure. They had the 31st ranked EPA allowed per play. The Vikings, from 2018 to 2022, a 5-year stretch as well, were 10th in EPA per play allowed. And then if you just do the last 3 years, 2020 to 2022, and the defense hasn't been as good, 20th in the NFL. Dante had to carry some of these teams on his back. And people don't remember that. I don't know the revision, like, why Culpepper doesn't get a lot of credit for some of this stuff. I feel like people didn't watch Dante Culpepper when I see them talking about him on this on Twitter and in general. Because you look at all the smart football minds who have chimed in on this conversation. Like Doug Farrar, who is on this show talking about Hendon Hooker. He is one of the smartest football people I know. He's like, what is this Vikings Twitter hellscape that they're saying Kirk Cousins is better than Dante Culpepper? And like Eager gets a lot of grief, some fair, some not. But he's one of the smartest football people I know as well. And he looks at things from a much, much more of a data perspective. But he was a former player. He played college football. So it's not like he doesn't understand X's and O's. Some of these things, when you look at it, Dante is just a better player. Let's look at another stat. Dave, from Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders, he chimes in. Adjusted DYAR, defense-adjusted yards. All right? Sorry, I can't remember. DYAR. Defense-adjusted yards above replacement. So it, basically what this metric does is it takes – the yards that you get adjusted for what the defense is giving you or what the defense is. And then it kind of tells you what it would be above a replacement level player. So replacement level players at that time would have been like, hey, the Gus Frat games, Todd Bauman, like when they ended up playing for an injured Dante Culpepper. And take a look. Dante Culpepper is 3 seasons more valuable than any Kirk Cousins season. And that's an era-adjusted metric. Culpepper's 2004 was legendary. His 2000, his first year as a starter, was incredible. Sarah, Dante was an MVP candidate. If Peyton Manning doesn't throw 49 touchdowns in 2004, he wins the MVP award running away. Like, some of the things that he was able to do without Randy Moss was beyond incredible. Like, Randy Moss partially tore his hamstring. He was officially out for 3 games, missed more of multiple others. He only had like 49 catches for 700 some yards. Nate Burleson and Jermaine Wiggins were the main pass catcher. Burleson had his only 1,000-yard season in the NFL. When you look at everything encompassing, the answer is simple. It's Dante Culpepper. And people are like, oh, he had Randy Moss. His best season came without Randy Moss for most of the year.
And I've seen this all over. But he didn't have Randy Moss or Robert Smith or Chris Carter.
Yeah, well, and Culpepper didn't.
What about Diggsy and JJ and Prime Thielen and, of course, Dalvin Cook?
Culpepper didn't have a top defense. His best defense was like something like 22nd overall. Like, his defenses were awful. The situations he was put in were terrible. Like, Red McCombs was cheap. You had coordinators who were also full-blown position coaches. Sometimes you have that with the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator, but then you get an assistant. Vikings didn't. They didn't get upgrades to Winter Park. It was cheap, 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 cheap. And Culpepper had to really carry some of those teams. His starting tackle, Corey Stringer, died during training camp. He had a poor offensive line, especially towards the end. He had like okay-ish receivers outside of Randy Moss once Chris Carter left. Like, you're talking about a guy who never had a great running back. Yeah. He had Robert Smith for one season. So anybody who's like, oh, Culpepper had this, that, and the other thing, they don't know what they're talking about, because they're not going to say that Kirk Cousins had arguably better cast of characters as a whole than Dante Culpepper did, because you had the 1 year in 2000. Chris Carter was tailing off. Moss was at his peak. Robert Smith was playing well, but he retired right after that year. Cousins is at it better when it comes to surroundings than Dante ever did. And Dante is still viewed as a better quarterback by those who know the game and who do this for a living. And to me, that says something. And that's before I even form my own opinion. It's like, okay, when you look at it, Culpepper is a better football player. And that's not even including with that Luke Immann tweet that we showed earlier. In the replies, somebody mentioned the running. And he's like, not including here is 2,500 rushing yards and 30 touchdowns. Like, this is where some of this disingenuous bullshit comes into play. How do you not even include that in the original discussion point? Because Dante Culpepper was one of the first, like, of the modern day dual threat quarterbacks. You're talking like the Cam Newtons, the Josh Allens. Like, he's not Lamar Jackson because they don't have similar styles, but this is so important in the context of Culpepper and how he was able to win, how he was able to create. And there's so many people who just want to look at counting stats, and it's honestly, it's a bunch of bullshit, Dave. It's awful. You have to look deeper. You have to understand what you're looking at. And so many people that have these conversations don't understand what they're looking at. And is it blissful ignorance, or is it just not knowing? I'm not going to be able to speak for everybody and pinpoint. But some people are just intentionally ignorant, because ignorance is bliss. Some people just don't understand. And then when you have conversations with them to teach them, you know, it opens their eyes. And I'm not a king. I'm not a god at this. But I try to get as much information as I can before I make an informed opinion. And this is the only informed opinion. Like, Dante Culpepper is unquestionably a better quarterback when you look at raw tools, when you look at performance adjusted across eras, when you look at how they dealt with talent, how they dealt with adverse conditions. We talk about all the time, Kirk Cousins needs to have perfect conditions. Guess what? Dante Culpepper took a team with like the 30th ranked defense into Lambeau Field, where the Packers had never lost a playoff game. Actually, scratch that. I think in 2003 they lost to the Falcons. So they had lost one playoff game at Lambeau in their entire history. Beat them. Mm-hmm. Culpepper should have been the MVP in 2004, sans some 49 touchdowns. I'd argue he still should have been the MVP because of how he had to carry that team to a playoff berth.
Oh, and it was highly debated at the time. Trust me. We all know Peyton got it because of the 50 touchdowns. But we were screaming that Dante deserved it. Now, as everybody knows here, or most people know here, I love charts and graphs. So we get this graph from Arjun Menon. I think I posted it up earlier. It shows how, adjusted for career, you can see how Dante is so much higher up on that point when it talked to game numbers, right? And then you could see exactly about where his knee went. And if it wasn't for knees and quarterbacks in the Minnesota Vikings, you know, there's always the what if. He was on a trajectory to be probably the greatest quarterback the Vikings ever had before he blew up the knee, and then things got stupid with the organization. Red McCombs and the whole works, and then Brad Childress, and it just went to crap. But until then, he was performing a lot higher than Kirk Cousins. Now, has Kirk Cousins passed him, you know, there at the end? Yeah, he's getting up there, but that's an accumulative thing. And it's no knock on Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins has steadily improved. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. But Dante was on his way to being an elite quarterback across the board. And it was just nothing but growing and growing and growing all until his knee blew up. So when you compare the two, you can say it's apples and oranges. Different time periods, different surroundings. Culpepper played on painted concrete, on AstroTurf. It's a much safer game now than it was then. Culpepper, the rules, you know, are safer now for the quarterback and for the wide receivers than they are then. The game is a little bit different in the fact that now it's more of a passing game because partially of the rules. It's not as much as a running game, but that man produced, and he produced some fantastic seasons.
Yeah, and you also have to take into consideration some of his high turnovers was him having to carry the football team because the football team around him wasn't great. And when you combine all of these elements, Dave, it blows my mind that people are just, whether willfully or not, overlook the fact that outside of just standard counting stats, there is really nothing that you could point to that says Kirk Cousins is better than Dante. He doesn't have a better arm. He's not more accurate. He's not a better runner. He's not better in the pocket. Like, what is he better at? And the fact is, he's not. And look, I don't dislike Kirk Cousins. I dislike Kirk Cousins as being the future of this team, considering what all you kind of have to factor in. Kirk Cousins is not good enough when it comes to building a team and paying him a lot of money. He's not elite. He's very good. And that's always been the thing. Mm-hmm. You don't want to pay a very good quarterback big boy money. And we know what the Vikings did when they signed him? They paid him elite money. Then the extension paid him elite money. And then the one-year extension paid him borderline elite money. And now it's not elite money anymore, but it's still a lot. And you look at these teams that are having mid-range QBs. Now there's a mid-range QB market. Jimmy Garoppolo got like $24 million a year. Like, that's your mid-range market. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about building a team considering what he gives you, how he elevates, which he really doesn't elevate the team around you very much. Honestly, you could argue he was propped up a lot by Kevin O'Connell, and Kirk still had to make the plays, but Kevin O'Connell was the antithesis of a lot of that success last year. And I've given Kirk a lot of credit, and he deserves it. But when you're talking about an elite player, he's not an elite player. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. Dante Culpepper, if he was in this past draft, goes first overall, and there's not a question. Because with Richardson, you had some questions. Okay, he's a little bit inaccurate. He's a little wild with the football. He's not super consistent. He hasn't played well against some really good competition. And he had 1 year of being a starter. Culpepper set NCAA passing records at Central Florida. Passing records. And he ran the football well. This is an all-time modern-day style quarterback that came around 15, 20 years too early. Mm-hmm.
And Sarah, MWO is correct. It was 2005 when the Bills took over.
Yep. And they were greeted with the Love Boat and Dante Culpepper shredding his knee beyond belief. And that I'll never forget that game because I was in my parents' basement because I was 15 at the time. And my dad had found mold in the downstairs bathroom. And I helped him take it out with a sledgehammer right after Dante. That was a frustrating day. But sledgehammers are always good to get that tension out, let me tell you. But
I don't see that, unless you're looking at those counting stats, there's not a comparison. No. People said, well, let's talk about playoff wins. Let's talk about playoff wins.
Culpepper was 2-2 in the playoffs. He went to an NFC championship game. He beat Brett Favre and the Packers on the road in Lambeau Field. Not just beat them. They got up to a 14-0 lead within 5 minutes and didn't relinquish it. They didn't even get a tie game in that one. Like, you look at some of this stuff, and considering the situation he had to deal with, if he had the will, stable organizational structure and willingness to spend money and put a good team and product on the field, we're having a completely different conversation.
The medical staff, you know, the training staff, the coaches. Yeah, I think Dante would have been on his way to being possibly the greatest quarterback the Vikings ever had. But like I said, he destroyed his knee in a time before the orthopedics was so good that they could repair stuff like that. You know,
even it wasn't just an ACL. It was the whole – his knee was just –
right.
It was screwed. Now,
he didn't dislocate it like Teddy did, but the damage was almost just as great, and it was rough, and unfortunate for him, and unfortunate for Vikings fans.
But, yeah.
But he, by far, is better overall, I think, than Kirk Cousins, and he didn't do the vapor locking. And you talked about Kirk Cousins and Kevin O'Connell, and Kevin O'Connell got him over the hump. And we had 13 wins last year, which is absolutely fantastic. And we saw advancements in Kirk Cousins' thinking process and how he handles the football. And he made big strides last year. But going into last year, he was 59-59-2. A perfect 500 QB. When it comes to QB wins, and now I can hear it now. Dave, QB wins is a bad stat. The whole team plays. Well, that's just the point of this whole argument. Dante had a worse team around him for a good chunk of that, for most of his career, than Kirk does. And still, Dante did better.
Mm-hmm. One stat I'm going to try and get from Eric is try to figure out his wins above replacement, because I don't know how far PFF data goes with that. And because Eric was a big proponent in creating the model of wins above replacement, I'd be curious to find out what that number is for Dante. And if I can get that information, I absolutely will relay it on. But yeah, that's about it. Look, if you don't understand how good Dante Culpepper was, go on YouTube. Search Vikings full games from 2000, 2001, 2003, 2004. Like, I've been trying to find the road game against the Green Bay Packers from 2004. He was lights out in that game. The playoff game, he was lights out. The Colts game, he was very good, but his stats don't show it from 2004. I'd highly recommend that one as well. There's a lot of really good Culpepper stuff out there that's free for you to find. Go watch him, because it's honestly night and day different watching him versus watching Cousins. And this isn't a show to bash Cousins. This is a show to really help people understand how fucking good Dante Culpepper was. And quite frankly, if after this, in all the different ways of showing it, and all the narrative stopping that we did on the show, if you still don't believe it, I God bless you. I don't understand it. And to me, my guess would be that you didn't want to change your opinion to begin with. You can look at counting stats. You can look at X, Y, and Z. Kirk Cousins had much better surroundings and did less with it. And Culpepper didn't have great surroundings most of his career and tried to do a lot with it. And to me, that speaks more volumes. And yeah, that's it. Dante Culpepper is the guy. Kirk Cousins is not. And we're going to leave the show at that.
What do we say?
Skull Vikings, Skull Dante.
Skull Vikings! Like, subscribe, and ring the bell to get notifications. It helps us grow this community, and we all love our Minnesota Vikings. And on behalf of Tyler Fornes and myself, Dave Stefano, thank you so dearly for watching The Real Forno Show. Skull, everyone! This has been a Vikings First and Skull production. Thanks for listening.